You are listening to the Lazy Equity Podcast, brought to you by Bobby Hayeri and Darren Venter, founders of the Investors Agency and DEBA. With over 20 years' experience in real estate between them and having bought hundreds, if not thousands, of properties around the country, you are in the right place to learn all things property. This podcast is designed to educate and empower everyday Aussies to take control of their future through property.
James, thank you so much for coming on the show, mate.
Honoured and a privilege to be here. Thank you for the invitation. I look forward to going on a little adventure with you.
Mate, very, very excited. We were talking just before the recording, and way back when, probably about 5 years ago, I did my first ever podcast with you as my business coach, and you helped me jump the hurdles and get the wheels in motion. And 4 years later, it's an absolute pleasure to have you back on. I'm really excited to learn a ton from you, not just personally, but also professionally as well.
Man, I'm excited. And, you know, it's having our chat and noticing the journey and watching the journey and looking at the growth of both you personally and also professionally. It's what a massive journey it's been. So well done for you, and excited to be here today. Thank you.
Thank you, mate. Well, look, you're a very big part of that. The first, I would say, 12 to 24 months of when I started the Investors Agency, you're very, very heavily involved in my day-to-day actions and my routines and my habits. And yeah, you were a very big part of that. And I want to talk about sort of what you do for your clients and the help, you know, how you guided me through in those early stages in the real estate space, which could be very, very daunting.
It is, right. And it is goes on. We can go down so many different rabbit holes with this, but what we've realized that, you know, by having someone, you know, either be me or someone by your side. And I think particular for male entrepreneurs and business owners, a lot of the time of that feeling of thinking they've got to do it themselves, being alone, and, you know, oh, I've just got to get in and just do, where I think a lot of the time the female entrepreneurs are more open to building relationships and more opening to that connection piece, where they can reach out and ask for more help, where guys, that lovely little ego gets in the road and go, oh, I should work it all out myself. But having someone in your corner, and, you know, if it's a friend, if it's a mentor, if it's a coach, if it's a colleague, if it's another business owner, whoever it is, but I think it's so important, particularly in our world today, of having someone in your corner just so you can lean on, bounce ideas off, and you know, just to run things past. So yeah, definitely very important.
Mate, in a few minutes, who's Shorty for the listeners?
You know, it's really interesting. I did a podcast this morning, and we talked about identity, and it was really interesting, you know, going a transition from when I had run my previous business into the coaching space, and going through that aha moment of transitioning of, you know, who I was. It was in the fitness space in my previous business life, where we had a couple of fitness centers and had some great success in that area, but it was a real identity piece of like, who was I? You know, so-called, in inverted commas, Mr. Fitness, but going through that transition period of like reassessing my values, you know, and I have up on my wall in front of me underneath my vision board, have it up on my wall in front of me, like my key values of family, health, connection, goals, growth, communication, love, empower and aspire. And a mantra that I read every day: my power is my connection. My power is my love. My power is my passion. I allow power to flow through me. I accept power and I power others. I accept love and light into my life easily and effortlessly, which allows me to give back unconditionally. I accept easily and effortlessly abundance of health, wealth, and happiness into my life. So that's who Shorty is.
Mate, that's so good. And you touched on it. You touched on it briefly just before, that you had a business in the fitness space, and it wasn't necessarily your purpose, or you had a bit of a identity, I don't know if I'd call it crisis, but you were having a shift in identity, and what sort of wanted you to go down the business coaching and personal coaching space? Because I imagine that would be, from an outsider looking in, I feel like that sort of industry, that sort of business would be one of the most difficult to get into.
Yeah, it's, you know, it was back in, we had some great success with having the fitness centers in Sydney. We had a couple of them, and with my business partner, and, you know, 2008 came, we had our business coach at the time, And we sat down to do our own, and we did our own strategy sessions, and mapped out, okay, what does the next year look like? And we had, you know, we had the managers in place, we had the team in place, we had the trainers in place, we had it all systemized, and I had the intention of growing and expanding it. And my business partner at the time was like, no, I'm just happy where I was. And so that was a trans, like we had that, we weren't aligned. So that's when it's like within 4 hours, he said, well, what would it be like if I bought you out? So let's entertain that. Within 4 hours, came up with the heads of agreement. And then that was like, oh, that was it. That was done. And I realized in that space, in that process, that fast, right? And the coach at the time goes, mate, I've never seen in my 30 years of coaching, I've never seen that happen so quickly. And I said, well, if you're not aligned, then what's the purpose? And so then obviously went back and did some navel gazing and go, well, what's next? And went back to do some study around neuro-linguistic programming, timeline therapy, hypnosis, just to really understand the mindset, because I knew within the fitness space, you could, you know, eat less and train more. But usually what's going on between the ears is can really hold us back. And so like I said to myself, what if we could use those similar tools and strategies in like with businesses, with life? And so that's where the combination of business and life coaching really took a new lease, a new of life. And so I ran a 4-month pilot program where I got a bunch of friends together and past clients. And over those 4 months, we met every fortnight and I introduced a new tool into the mix every fortnight. And people achieve more results in those 4 months than they did the whole previous year. And so what happened is that people had businesses and they go, oh, Shorty, can you come into my business and help me here? You know, Shorty, can you help me with my team here and so forth? And that's when it really, really took off about 2009 into the coaching space. So that was how we got into that space.
It's been about 15 years now then.
Yeah. Yep. I know. Where's that going?
Crazy. crazy.
Not bad for 21, eh?
That's madness after 15 years. And look, if I talk over you or cut you off, there's a slight little lag. So apologies there, Shorty, if I do that. How have you managed to juggle 15 years of growth with being a father of two as well?
Yeah, so it's been a really interesting journey. So I've got two kids with my wife, and she's had a previous daughter from a previous relationship, Riley, and I've been part of Riley's life since she was the age of 4, and I was 21 when I met Riley. So we just celebrated our 26 years together, me and my wife Nat, juggling, you know, it has been a juggle of, you know, kids and priorities and making sure being there as a father, being there as a husband, and also being there for clients and also being there for as a support person as well. So yeah, we can unpack that, and there are so many different things that I've learned because I strongly believe my kids are one of my best coaches and mentors. I always get lessons, life lessons from them every day, particularly around the dinner table. So it's been a journey, that's for sure.
Well, I want to unpack that because that's obviously what you've done personally, but it's also what you do for your clients. And I believe it's probably what most people want to try achieve is some level of balance within their life. And it's so easy to go down the rabbit hole of chasing more income, working more hours, or chasing something that you think is going to make you happy and fulfilled, but only you start feeling more and more empty as time goes by. So obviously that's what you do professionally, and you've been able to implement it personally as well. So I want to unpack that. Just before we started recording, you said that you actually spent some time in Bali with your family, and I had no idea about that. Please do tell.
So we like to do things a little bit different. And so what we wanted to do is to create some adventures and some experiences. So what we did is my stepdaughter stayed in Sydney, where we're from. And we took the two kids over to Bali. And we had a friend over there. So we purchased a villa off him. And we checked out a couple of schools over there. And eventually, three schools. One kid liked one school. The other one kid liked the other school, and then they both liked the third school. Thank goodness. And so we put them into school over there. Yeah, right. Totally. So lucky. And so,
how old were the kids?
So my daughter was in year 7, and my son was in year 5. My daughter was in year five and my son was in year three. So it was a little while ago now. My daughter's in year 11 and my son's in year nine now. So about six years ago. And so looking at that process, it was, we didn't know what we were getting into, and I was flying back every month to see clients. The time difference was, you know, obviously doing the co-working space, so getting up early, working half a day in Bali time, and then having the rest of the day off with my wife and then with the kids as well. And so what that taught was actually it can be done. It can be done if you know what to do. But at the same time, there's always surprises. Like, we didn't know that we're going to have our hand in our pocket to fix up our villa all the time. We didn't know that we had to pay security. We didn't know that going to the fresh fruit and veggie markets, there'll always be, you know, worms in your fruit and veggies. Like, looking at local knowledge of what you can't be taught that. It's like you've got to go and experience that. But what it did teach us is the ability to slow down. It taught us the ability to knowing that we can do these different adventures, and also knowing that there is more to life just rather than the day-to-day grind in Sydney, for example. So it was a beautiful time over there. If we were to do it again, we'll do things a little bit differently based from past experience. But yeah, it was certainly a different learning, but also a beautiful time over there, that's for sure.
How long were you guys in Bali for?
End up being 4 or 5 months. So we had the goal to do 12 months, but due to a couple of things, what we found is that we try to do the whole cooking thing ourselves, but going to the different markets is like, I don't know, we weren't tapping into the local knowledge or the local know-how. Then we go, well, let's try go out for dinner, but then going out for dinner, it becomes a costly exercise every night of the week. So that was a concern.
That's right.
There was a couple of safety concerns, and then visa concerns. So like, we had the expectation where we'd get a couple of visas. They didn't come through. So like, you know, during the night, my wife had to fly out to Darwin to come back, re-enter, and then fly back while I was in Sydney. You know, you look back and you go, oh, that was an interesting time. At the moment, during the time, it was pretty stressful. But living over there, it was beautiful. It was peaceful. It was so many different adventures and tours whilst we're over there. And the learning was amazing. There was a principal from Australia that was over there taking the kids as the principal over there. And, you know, one of the reasons why we also chose a school was walked into his office and there was 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, Good to Great, all these amazing books on the shelves. It's like, oh, so is that for the teachers? And he goes, no, that's for the kids. It's like, oh, where do we sign up? So looking at those types of principles into the teachings was phenomenal.
And what sort of impact do you think that 4 or 5 months had in regards to your relationship with the kids?
I think it had a massive impact. Like, we still talk about some of the stories and the experiences now. We still have the laughs. We still have the reminiscence of some of the things that happened over there. Taking the kids to the school, you know, on the mopeds, one on the front, one on the back, going to the different waterfalls. It's just those times together and just that experience. I think, you know, they're priceless, and you definitely can't put a price on them, that's for sure.
That's really interesting, because we were talking just before we started recording and I was saying how that's something that I've sort of always wanted to do in regards to just taking a year off when the kids were... I always had this thought that I have to do it before the kids start school. So it's like, it's sort of bothering me to some degree that I haven't done it and my eldest is going to start school in a year and a half. But it's really interesting to hear that you successfully managed to do it when your kids were at primary school and high school, you know, at a much older age. And, you know, it all worked out. So it's just interesting to see that it can happen at an older age as well.
Yeah. And so then we took that experience, and obviously COVID hit last couple of years, and it was like, and we've always been looking of how do we, you know, is there a better life out of Sydney, out of the craziness, the hustle and bustle and so forth. And so we thought, what's a similar energy to Bali? And obviously Byron has got a very similar energy, very transient, but also very, very heartfelt, very open. And very grounded. And so we came up to Byron 3 years ago in January for a holiday. And there was a school that we'd been recommended by, just by chance, from 3 to 4 people, go and check the Living School out in Lismore. And it's quite an alternative school. It's, you know, it's not mainstream. The guy who runs it is amazing. And so we were up and we came up for a holiday, for a week's holiday. And we thought, hey, how about we go and check out this school? And the kids go, okay. So we went and we had a meeting with the principal and he talked us through the school, and there was like a train carriage hanging from the ceiling. That was one of the classrooms. All the kids and the teachers were first name bases. Shoes were optional. But it was just more of a heart-centered type of schooling system. And so the kids fell in love with it. And I said to the principal, the owner, I said, like, this just sounds amazing. He said, well, there's some, you know, some opportunities. They've got some openings that the kids can go into for their classes. I said, okay, cool. I said, when do they start? When's the term? Because they're different terms. They do 6-week cycles instead of 11-week cycles. And he goes, next week.
Sure.
And I said, cool, book them in. He goes, okay.
While you're up there on holidays from Sydney.
Yep. So madness. We didn't have any accommodation. The kids only had packed their holiday clothes. We still had the house in Sydney where my stepdaughter was living. And so the kids started school, and we moved because we were trying to look for holiday accommodation. And obviously knowing a few people in the real estate industry, we couldn't find a permanent rental anywhere. We applied about 10 times, got knocked back. And so we moved in holiday rentals 8 times over 3 months. And so each kid had their bucket, and that was all their clothes. And we just moved from place to place. It was a great opportunity to see the different sites up here in Northern Rivers. So we spent all our time in Lennox Head, which is now where we permanently live. And so what happened is that then in the meantime, I went back and cleaned up a house so we could rent that out. And then we finally found a place in Lennox Head. We go, cool, let's buy this, because we were in the opportunity that we could actually purchase something. So within 3 months, we had moved 8 times. Kids started a new school, packed up the house in Sydney, and we bought a house. So it was pretty epic journey.
Looking back now, I don't know how you felt when you were in the thick of it, in the midst of it. Looking back now, you're probably laughing about it. But when you're in the thick of it, it probably would have been extremely stressful. I mean, it might not have been. I don't know. What was sort of the conversation you guys were having with the family at that time?
Well, the kids were having a great time because they were like going from a full private school in Sydney to like, you know, carefree, not carefree, but just a different way of learning.
Shoes off at school.
Loving it, right? Loving it. And then, you know, where we were staying in holiday accommodation was pretty much on the beach. So that was good.
So good.
I was still working, still traveling back to Sydney once a month. So it was starting to get into a flow. Yes, there was the components of missing family and friends in Sydney. But it was just that trying to readjust period to look at, right, how do we reestablish ourselves in a new area?
Mate, that's so good. That's I want to touch on your time in Bali. I just go back to that just briefly. I think one of the things that I imagine would be super valuable, I sort of picture if I lived there with my family, with my kids for some time, one of the things that would be a lifelong lesson and would be extremely valuable would be for the kids to see how people in different countries, different cultures live, especially a culture that is not a first world culture. We are so spoiled in Australia. Everyone has, you know, the big houses, and everyone has even a complex, a unit. Even if you live in a unit, it's still a nice new unit, a big unit generally. You've got an abundance of food available to you. You've got everything at the tip of your fingers. You've got everything available. And I think it's a bit dangerous for kids to grow up thinking that that's the norm. I think that's when you get kids that become super spoiled, or they have unrealistic expectations about life. So I think there's some lessons that, at least if I went with my family, would be lifelong lessons that that the kids would have picked up.
On two fronts with that, there's two fronts there. One is that the kids were going to an international school. So what they do is they get a perspective of a worldly view of how different cultures, you know, from Sweden, from the US, from Russia, like, and having different conversations. I think we calculated there was something like 30 or 40 different nationalities in at the school at that time. So it, once again, that opened up the context Wow. of different styles of communication and different cultures. But then, you know, after schools and on the Yeah. weekend, when you go out and hang with some of the locals and getting immersed into that culture, once again, it provides a different context and a different environment for the kids to really learn and really take note of, wow, yeah, there is life outside of Australia, that's for sure.
100%. And also, like, Southeast Asian countries, Middle Eastern countries, generally their family values are extremely important to them as well. So, like, if you go and see how an Indonesian family lives, it's generally the great grandparents, if they're still alive, live with the grandparents, live with the parents, live with the kids, live with the grandkids, all in one complex to some degree. Generally, that's traditionally how they live. And, like, if you compare that to Australia, as soon as the child has turned 16, a lot of the time, either the child wants to move out, or the parent kicks them out. A lot of the time, that's a generalization. But there is yeah. There's very minimal family values, and it's very much you're on your own as soon as you can support yourself. So I think just seeing that as well, that would strengthen their values and their beliefs and their relationship with you. And I think it would just have such a positive impact on them that we probably haven't even thought about.
Yeah, and I think it's the whole gratitude piece as well. It's acknowledging, okay, yes, it's nice to live in a nice place and have nice food and have nice, you know, things, so to speak, but also having that coming from a gratitude of acknowledging that, you know, I remember we had had some great help over there, and sometimes those people that did help brought their kids, and so that our kids hang out with their kids, and even though their English wasn't fluent, at least you could see there was dialogue being had through colouring in or making things together. So once again, it's a connection piece, it's a communication piece, and definitely a gratitude piece, that's for sure.
Mate, I want to talk about your business. So on a daily basis, you're working with top performing real estate professionals around the country. What are some of the challenges that you do see with professionals in the real estate space? Do you only work with real estate professionals?
That's majority of my clients is in that real estate space. I do have clients outside of that space, but there are similar frustrations, concerns, challenges that people go through. But majority of my clients are in that real estate space, particularly that, you know, the principals, directors, and the leading agents. They all have similar issues and similar challenges that they face. And that one of the biggest challenges is usually themselves. It's that wanting to obviously achieve their goals and aspirations, having challenges with how do we find team, how do we recruit and develop teams, yet thinking that they need to be the sole income generator for their business. How do they juggle work life and home life when they're so on throughout the day and constantly on the phone and putting deals together, coming home to readapting to the family and readapting to trying to connect with their family or their kids. How do they maintain their own personal health and well-being? So it's a juggle act, you know, that they go through. And so where I come into that mix is to really take an assessment of where they're currently at and where, you know, I do what's called the wheel of life, looking at all aspects of life, their health, their relationships, their family, their business, their finances, their experiences of holidays, their own personal development, and their own spirituality, whatever, if that's religion or self-growth. And we look at a review process and we score each area out of 10. So 0 being it's not, you know, it's just not happening at all, and 10 being no, I'm really good at that moment right now, I'm in flow. And what we do with that wheel of life, we can see where we're really out of balance. And looking at those key areas, like, okay, something maybe a 5 out of 10, it's not the ability to get to a 9 out of 10. It's like, how do we take it from a 5 to a 6? What would be one or two things, not 22 things, because we could list 22 things, but what would be one or two things that would make a massive difference this week? Not this month, not next year, but just this week. And that's where we start, is to really have a good assessment of where things are at, where do they want to get to, and then, right, let's create a plan of what we need to do daily and weekly to get you forward in order to achieve what you want to achieve.
I remember doing that with you going back 4 or 5 years ago, and it's so important because you don't think of these sorts of things, but there is absolutely no happiness or no contentment or no fulfillment that comes from someone that is a multi-millionaire, billionaire, whatever you might call it, success in the financial realm, but doesn't have a good relationship with their kids because he's never at home, or is at the doctor often because he's severely overweight and unhealthy or whatever it might be. And having that balance is extremely important. And like you said, I remember you said it, 4 or 5 years ago as well, when we initially did it, it's not about getting everything to 10 straight away or 9 straight away. It's seeing where we can make those very small incremental changes, which will give you that more balanced, life over time and more sort of, equal life to all those things that sort of give you that fulfillment to some degree.
Yeah, and so here is this spanner I'm going to throw into the works is I don't believe that there is actually balance. I just believe there's different areas and levels of focus, because where most people fall down is that they're at work and they're constantly thinking at home. Or when they're at home and they're constantly thinking about work. And so what happens is that, right, we have this seesaw approach, but if we were actually at work and we focus on what we need to get done at work is one hat, and if we be the best version of ourselves and most effective and productive in that area, we're wearing that hat, and then when we, on our way home, we shift our hats to be a dad, a father, a husband, and we shift it to that, and we be the best version of ourselves for that, what happens is that those numbers start to increase. Those numbers get us closer to an 8 or 9 or 9.5. And so what happens, the biggest thing I find is that internal voice of, oh, what are the kids doing? Like all that, but where we should be focusing at work, or we should be focusing at the gym, or when we're at home, it's just like, oh, I should be going for a run. No, be there, be present, be focused at home. And so looking at that, and that's that internal voice that we have, and how do we deal and how do we manage that with that little voice? And I like to use the hat analogy. It's like, how do we transfer our hat? Because when you're in work mode, you draw upon different characteristics. When you're putting a deal together, you know, you got to bring your energy, got to bring your confidence, got to bring your expertise, got to bring your knowledge into that. Now you take those things when you're trying to work out Lego with your 5-year-old kid. It doesn't work, right? It does not work. Trust me, I've tried it myself and it just does not work. I get told, Dad, or my stepdaughter Riley calls me Shorty, get in your car and do your little process. So we need to change our hats, because when we're working with the Lego with our 5-year-old, you know, it's a completely different characteristics that we need to draw upon when we're doing that. And so it's about being aware of the different hats that we wear. But it's also being, how do we actually transition our hats, taking one off and then putting one on? So it's going through a process, which I'm happy to go through and share that.
That's what I was going to ask. What's when Riley says, Shorty, go do your process, get in your car and go do your process, what does that look like?
You know, if I'm on the road all day and seeing clients and doing workshops and presenting, I'm sort of at, like, bzzz, that go energy. And that's where a lot of my clients have that energy as well. It's like, phone, deal, let's go, right? And so What I do is that when I come home, I'm sitting in the driveway, I go, okay, great, where am I? I'm just about walking at home. Okay, who do I need to be? I need to be the loving husband and the awesome dad. Okay, cool. When was the last time I was that? And I think about a memory when I was that, when I connected to the kids, connected to my wife, and really was present. And as you can see, I'm already bringing up a memory, because you can hear my tonality and my voice change, right? I've gone for visit. So like, whoo, come down a little bit. And so what I do, I remember a past positive experience, and then I can walk in and go, hey, Dad's home. So it's a lot more connected, because I remember a past positive experience and I've changed my hats from the coach hat to the dad and the husband hat.
That's so good. I'm going to implement that from today. So I do Do something, I guess you'd say it's similar to some degree, but not the memory. I don't implement the memory thing, which I'm definitely going to start doing. So I journal every morning, and my books are in my car. They're always on my passenger seat, except when my wife gets in the car, they go in the glove box. But my journals are always on my passenger seat. So I normally in the morning, early when I wake up, I do the journaling, and then what I do when I get home is I read what I journaled about in the morning. And normally what I'm journaling about is, and I'm also writing down about being practicing gratitude or whatever it might be. So it's just that 1 or 2 minutes that I'm reading what I wrote about in the morning, just to bring it back to the front of my mind, because generally what I'm writing about is personal, not business. And that sort of switches me from that business mindset to a personal mindset. But in terms of the memory, I think that's a really good one, which I'll start implementing.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing. What we find is that the memories are such a powerful process. And we can always remember a positive time in the past where it just anchors us back into that moment where we can see what we see, hear what we heard, and have that feeling. And we can really turn up that kinesthetic, that feeling approach to go, oh, that felt warm, that felt connected, that felt loving, that felt tingling inside. And now we're actually feeling that, we're being that, and then we can enter in wherever we need to enter. So like I get clients to do that. If they're going for a listing presentation, right, actually get them to do that same process, because sometimes they may be doing admin or having a team meeting. And so in their car before they go into a presentation, listing presentation, right, who do I need to be right now? Okay, cool. Let's remember a time when I really nailed that listing presentation. Okay, great. Let's remember that. Access those certain characteristics. Hey, let's go. And then what happens? It's like they're on straight away. And so you can do this in every aspect of your life. It doesn't necessarily need to be on the home front. It can be in the work front. It can be putting deals together. It can be dealing with clients. It can be dealing with kids as well. So no matter what area, it works.
Nice, mate. Nice. I want to touch on something that you touched on earlier in regards to, I guess, that purpose when you went from one business to another. My mind went on a bit of a tangent, so apologies going backtracking a little bit. I'm sure you've spoken to clients who potentially don't know what their purpose is, or just potentially don't feel fulfilled in what they're currently doing. On the outside, they might look very successful. And to those people who are listening, I'm doing successful with inverted commas, because business success is not the only success. But from the outside looking in, they might seem very successful, but they just don't feel fulfilled. They don't know what their purpose is. Do you have any tips or advice for someone who's in that scenario?
There are so many clients that I have worked and continually work with that financially and business success, as you said, in inverted commas, but they're yearning. There's a yearning of something missing. There's a lack of, it's just, I thought I would feel different. That I thought I would be in a different space. I thought I would be happier. I thought I'd have more purpose. And, you know, it's a really interesting process that we take on, because what we do is that first thing we reestablish, okay, so what is important to you? So we elicitate their values, and we go back to their values question of what is important to you. And we really nut out their key values and why those values are important. And then from that is like, well, who are you? Like, you're not your work, you're not your home, but like, what is that? What's that driving piece? What lights you up? And so what we do is identify that. And then it's like, okay, so what contribution are you now giving back to the world? So, you know, they may be a really high performing agent, but like, okay, what's that contribution piece? Like, where is it that you can now contribute? Is it a charity? Is it a challenge? Is it something that a hobby that you can find an additional aspect where you don't need to bring this bravado, you don't need to bring your intensity, you don't need to bring, you know, that who you are, who you've identified in that area of your life, where you can bring something completely different in this area of life. So by identifying the values, identifying, you know, the key identity pieces, leads to then identifying some further purpose. And I like to look at sort of charity work, or how can you give back, or even a hobby, because that in itself, you will find so many key lessons about who you are, about giving back, because it's a real awakening process, that's for sure.
Okay, that's really important. I think I'm talking about myself personally. It's quite hard for me to open up and get clarity on who am I, or I guess now that I've got kids, my values and stuff are a lot clearer than what they were. But I've been pre-kid, I wouldn't have known what my values were and what brings me joy and fulfillment and a whole range of other things. But I guess, yeah, now that as I get a little bit older, it's a little bit clear. It is clearer for me now. But I think, having someone on your side who can extract that information out of you, because I feel for a lot of people, myself more so, I know that I'm very, very much introverted and I keep all my emotions and thoughts and feelings to myself. So I guess that's the hats off to you and a testament to you to be able to get that out of your clients and get it on paper so then they have more clarity on who they are.
So one of the things, yeah, thank you, but one of the things I always strongly recommend is you can always, so we do SWOT analysis all the time for our businesses, right? But how often do we do SWOT analysis on ourselves? If you were a business, you know, for you personally, what was your own SWOT analysis look like? And one of the things I always recommend to all my clients is, when is your blue sky time throughout the week? Because we get so busy in the trenches, we get so busy putting deals together, we get so busy doing. It's the ability to stop and reflect of like, okay, where's my blue sky time? And that blue sky time, what that is, it's about looking at a helicopter view of yourself, looking at the helicopter view of where that wheel of life is, having a helicopter view of all aspects and like where, doing a rating. Where is this out of 10? Okay, what do I need to focus on next week? You know, how do we take it from a 5 to a 6? What's still outstanding? And this is not about getting on the phone and ringing people or getting on the emails, but this is just about having a review and go, okay, what would be the next step in each of these different areas? And that in itself is such a powerful tool. Like I'm working with a high performing agent, and this one piece alone, every Friday morning he does this. And this has a massive impact because it gives him a helicopter view. He's writing $3-4 million in commission every year. So it's all systems go with his business. But at the same time, doing this allows him, where he's his own investments, because he hasn't done any investing. He's earning this money, but now it's the opportunity. He's had this time. Okay, right. Where's his family? He's looking at to start a family. He's looking to get married, looking at to go on holidays. And so this time gives him time just to reflect and go, all right, let's have a helicopter view of where my life is at. What's my next step?
So on that, with this top performing agent, not this one specifically, but in general, when you work with clients, do you see any commonality between the top performing agents and other areas of their top performing agents in terms of their work and finances and the impact that has on other aspects of their life? So is there a commonality that the top performing agents generally are falling behind on the other aspects of their life, is there not a commonality there? I don't feel like I worded that question very well, but do you understand what I'm trying to say?
I get it. So what I find is their activity. So for those top performing agents, their activity of doing the calls, doing all the prospecting, all the follow up and so forth, that is it's almost triple than anyone else, any mid-tier agent. And so what I realize is that yes, they're doing longer hours. Yes, there are certain things that are suffering. Majority are still, health is still a high value need. So they're still quite concerned with their health. However, what a lot of the time is, yes, they look after their health in the gym or training and the right supplementation, but also because it's on a high volume, they also have more outlets. So more alcohol use, more drug use, more addiction abuse creeps in as their outlet. And so that then has a rippling effect to relationships, and has a rippling effect to different areas of life. And so that's where I come in and go, okay, let's have an assessment of like, why do you feel that you need to have that outlet or that escape? And let's start to unpack that and process that. And if we could tweak this or tweak that, what would that actually mean? And if we could have your blue sky time and you could actually delegate or actually get another team member to do that, what would that look like? So what happens is that they get so in the trenches and thinking that more, high, comms. It's that where I come in and sometimes slap them in the back of the head and pull them up by the scruff of their neck and go, what are the goalposts here? what are the goalposts in all aspects of your life, not just earning more GCI, but in all aspects of your life? Because if you keep on going this trajectory, yes, cool, you will have the next beautiful $10 million house, but you'll be there by yourself and with your dog that usually goes to the dog sitters anyway for the whole day. So really, who are you going to share this with? And so it's having these frank conversations, and sometimes they need it, because a lot of the time that lovely word ego can get in the road and mask their decisions, and thinking that, you know, it's the glitz and the glamour and the high life. And that is that energy feeder of putting deals together, being praised. Oh, you're amazing. You're amazing. But it's sometimes we need that sense of reality. Go, hey, let's just take stock of where things are at. And then, are you really happy? Are you really achieving what you want to achieve? So yeah, I hope that sort of lands where it needs to land for those listening.
Mate, I think that was a really, really good answer. I'm sure it will resonate with a lot of people. I think I'd be interested to know, with those top 1%, 2% agents that you deal with in comparison to the other 98%, what are the characteristics that they implement on a professional? I know you said they do about three times the amount of prospecting and calls and whatnot. Are there any other specific characteristics or habits that you see those top performing agents implement that the others don't?
Yeah, there are. Big one is discipline. Big one is consistency. And the big one is priorities. Yeah. You know, I've worked with a bunch of agents who, you know, aren't in the top 5% of agents. And what I see time and time again is the whole shiny ball syndrome. It's, you know, they've set out their time of where they need to be doing their prospecting and putting deals together, and then something comes up, and then they're off the tangent, and then something else comes up. And so a lot of the time my clients send me their daily numbers of you know, activity numbers, and I say, like, mate, Yanni, what happened? Oh, well, I did this. And it's like, but why? And so you can see, and then what happens is that all the excuses come up. And so for those top agents, it's like, no, these are, it's the discipline needs to be there. And it's almost like that it's a non-negotiable, we call it, where it's just like, no, everything else can wait, but I need to get that done. And that discipline then leads to that consistency. And then the priorities kick in. Well, you know, because what I see a lot of the 90% of the agents, it's feast and famine, right? Oh, we've got a couple of deals on. Oh, okay, we'll stop prospecting. Oh, okay, I've got no deals on. Oh, I better start prospecting. And so this seesaw approach, where the top agents, they, it's just regardless. They, if they've got 10, 20, 30 listings on the go, it's always prospecting. It's always putting deals together. And that's where you see they're building the teams around them to actually then go, okay, right, I'm about to tap out here, then how do we actually then offset that with other team members? And so what happens is that they start to build the team around them to continually to support that growth.
Yeah, okay. And what do you have any productivity hacks or habits that you help your clients implement that do get those top results?
Yeah, definitely. So a couple of things is obviously your morning routines, your morning rituals to start off the day. Planning is so something that a lot of people don't do, that when you do it, has a massive impact. So really getting everything out of your head, either for the day, for the week, and categorizing that, and then prioritizing that, and then delegating that. That key component has a massive impact to high-performing agents. And then obviously we talk a lot within the industry about ideal weeks, and chunking times for different tasks and so forth. But where most people fall down around creating their ideal week is not knowing the characteristics for that chunk of activity. So remember when we talked about wearing the different hats, it's like, okay, cool, I'm prospecting hat. Who do I need to be? What are those characteristics? And then looking at that in, okay, now I'm in admin, or now I've got a team meeting, looking at the different hats and characteristics for that time in your ideal week. Then at the end of the week is the review of the week, and the four key questions is, okay, what are my wins? What am I proud of? What are my challenges? What are my setbacks? What are my key lessons, both positive and negative? And then what do I need to be doing differently? Because we are creatures of habits, we're creatures of patterns, and we can identify the good patterns that we do and how do we do more of them. And when we identify the poor habits, how do we learn from them and change them? This is where that review process every week will really help to level up your results.
You talked about routine. I want to throw you under the bus a little bit here, Shorty. What are some? Are you big on routines personally? And if you are, what are they?
Yeah, big time. So I love my morning routines and I love my nighttime routines. So every morning when I'm in at home, it's usually up at 5:30. Go for a walk with my lovely wife up to Lennox Head Point. That's where we're from. Just south of Byron, and then we go for a swim together down the beach amongst the dolphins and, you know, Chris Hemsworth and all that kind of stuff. Only joking.
So
and
good.
Then and then come home, have an ice bath, jump in the ice bath, and then usually plan my day. Usually when it gets a bit cooler, I do sauna and bath, ice bath routine. And then a bit of meditation as well. So kids are usually up by 7:30. So that's all done by 7:30. And then we get under the way ready for the school routine. I'm currently doing what's called the 75 hard challenge, which is a mental toughness challenge, which today I'm on day 75. So this is my last day. So that
congratulations.
Always look. Thank you. So what that means is I do 2 45-minute sessions every day. One of them's got to be outdoors. I've got to read 10 pages of a self-development book, 4 liters of water, follow a food plan of your choice, but no alcohol or cheat meals, and take a progress pic of yourself every single day. So once again, it's that helps to create habit, that helps to create routine. And so by, you know, either having a friend to help you with, or a mate, or even an app, what helps to create those routines and getting into that format.
Mate, well done on 75 hard. I don't know if I would be able to, well, not with that language. I know you're big on language. With that language, I definitely won't be able to do it. but yeah, no, I know how difficult and challenging it can be. So well done for getting through it. You touched on nighttime routine, and I'm a firm believer of a nighttime routine, because your morning routine is solely dependent on what your nighttime looks like. If you have a poor nighttime routine, you don't get a good night's sleep, and you have a rough night, your morning is out the window. There's no chance you're going to have a good routine in the morning. Is there anything that you implement at nighttime as well?
Yeah, so my goal is bed by 9:30. 90% of the time it works. And then reading my 10 pages of my book. I've been starting to, before 9:30, start to do some stretches. Great book that I've just finished, Joe Hippenstiel, Ultimate Human Performance. Bunch of stretches that I do every night, which has really helped my sleep, but also helped my training as well. So getting into that routine at night, and then no screen time as I go through that process, and then finish off with 10 pages of my book, and then in bed. So that's my usually nighttime routine.
Nice, mate. And you said you just finished the book. Was it Joe Hippenstein?
Yeah, Joe Hippenstiel. It's called Joe Hippenstiel, Ultimate Human Performance. He was a 20-year decathlete, world standard, and he's written a great book about the power of flexibility, and goes through some of his strategies and techniques around that, and how to minimize injuries and prevent injuries.
Okay, and just before we started recording, I asked you a question. I think you said you're currently reading it, but I could be wrong. The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho?
Yep. Just started rereading that again, because that's moving into my...
So you've read that before?
Yeah. Love it.
So I'm listening to that one. I've read it once, and this is the third time I'm listening to it. I think it's one of those books where, for the first time I read it, someone from the cafe, an older guy who I tend to get quite a bit of life advice from, and sort of, he's just a very, very, very good character, someone that I look up to and sort of would like to have a similar life to him when he's, you know, he's in his 50s now with 3 kids. So it's just someone that I like to get advice off. So I speak to him quite a bit. He gave me that book probably like 4 years ago, and I read it and I was like, this doesn't mean anything to me. I don't get it. Why would he recommend this book to me? And then
love it.
Like a year later, I was like, oh, you know what? I might listen to that book again. It might mean something now. And then it resonated with me a little bit. And every time I've read it, I've got about half an hour left. I was listening to it this morning. Every time I've listened to it or read it, it just resonates with me more and more and more. So I think I think it's a book that everyone has to read. But if it doesn't resonate with you, I'm sure there's some stage in your life where it will.
And that's the thing with some of these books. It's, you'd need to read them a couple of times, because it'll also depend on what stage of life you're in as well. and you'll get lessons every single time you read it. It's, you know, it there that and Think and Grow Rich, that and Good to Great, that and Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, all those key books, every time you read it, it's like, oh, they're great reminders of like, yep, that's right. Oh, I didn't read that bit before. Is that a new chapter? No, it's always been there. You just weren't ready to listen to it.
Right. It's happened so many times as I'm listening to The Alchemist. This time I'm like, I swear this wasn't in there last time, but it's obviously, yeah, it's because it didn't resonate with me last time. It's so funny that you said that. While we are talking about books, one of the questions I was going to ask you as we look to wrap things up is, what is your number one book recommendation or the top book that you've read?
You know, it's funny, like I did an audit checklist of all my books at home, and also all my ebooks and also all my Audible books, because I'm going to share that with clients to see what they have and what they haven't read, and we start a little book club. And going through that list, there's so many different books there. It's like, oh that's right, you know, from the book called The One Thing, from the book called Legacy, from about the New Zealand All Blacks, book called Impossible, a book called Tribe of Mentors. Like, there is not one book, because every single book has resonated with me and has made an impact of who I am and how I've actually, because I think by reading and then doing it has made a huge transformation of even in for me personally, for clients, and even in my daughter's basketball teams that I coach, like that has, I utilize a lot of these strategies into their trainings and their skills and development. So yeah, there's so many books to quote them all.
Right, as we look to wrap things up for the day, we started implementing something just from last week. This is the first time we've done it. We've got it off a different podcast series, The Diary of a CEO, where the previous guest will write down a question for the new guest that's coming on. So what I'm also going to do is ask you to send me through a question that you want me to ask the next guest, not knowing who they are. But what the question was for you from the previous guest was, what is the biggest lesson that you have learned professionally or personally during your time as a coach?
The power of communication. And this is both personally and professionally. I learned this lesson when my dad left when I was 5, and taking on that of what not to do in a relationship, of what not to or how not to communicate. So it's been a life journey of how to improve communication both internally, so inside my own mind and inside a client's mind of that little voice and what we say to ourselves, and then how do we communicate effectively to others. And that could be at home, that could be with colleagues, it could be with the team, that could be with clients, it could be whoever. And I think communication is one of the most powerful things that is unestimated, that when we have an understanding around it, it changes the dynamic of all relationships.
I could not agree with that more, mate. I think you know, being a business owner, we've got quite a few team members. Learning how to communicate with different team members and how they like to be communicated with is extremely important. Learning after 17 years with my wife, we've been together for 17 years, even still learning how to communicate to potentially take the tension or friction out of a conversation which doesn't need to have tension or friction. I've learned a lot about communicating since I've had to negotiate with my toddler. She's probably taught me the most, the little 3.5-year-old Mia. So you said at the very beginning, you've learned some of your biggest lessons from your kids. I can 100% relate. I've learned a lot about myself with sort of frustration, how to control your frustration or being reactive rather than taking something in and trying to remove yourself from a situation if you're feeling sort of emotional. So I couldn't agree with you more. I think that's a really good answer. And yeah, if you can communicate, if you do learn that art of communicating with different people in a different manner, it's going to help your personal life, your professional life in every aspect.
Yeah, perfect. Amazing. Just totally agree.
Mate, thank you so much for coming on the show. We've been very, very generous with your time. We're almost hitting at 1 hour. It's been an absolute pleasure, and I'm sure the listeners have, along with myself, have gained a ton of value and learned a lot. We're going to put all your where people can contact you, all your handles in the show notes, and where can people find you as well if they don't get a chance to have a look at the show notes?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, obviously with a website, jamesshort.com.au, or on our socials, just at James Short, or at Coach James Short. Send us a DM, reach out, happy to chat.
Thank you so much, Shorty.
Thank you so much. It's been an honor and a privilege, and keep doing the amazing job. Thanks for having me today.
Thanks, mate.
Thanks for listening to the Lazy Equity Podcast. The advice given on this podcast is of a general nature only, and you should make your own decisions before taking any financial risks. If you would like to stay in touch with the show, join the Lazy Equity Facebook group, or find the Investors Agency on Instagram and Facebook.